Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Al Arpad from Fenimore Craig for the appellant defendant below Allegiant Airlines. I'd like to start off, reserve 3 minutes if I can.
All right.
More or less, see how things go. The most important thing I think I have to say right off the bat is that Allegiant is not asking the Court to reweigh the evidence for sufficiency. We believe that the evidence simply doesn't prove unjust enrichment or damages from unjust enrichment, even if you take it in the absolute best vein that you can in favor of the plaintiff. Plaintiff's answering brief focuses on facts to such an extent that they really didn't even respond to some of Allegiant's key legal arguments, such as the trade secret argument. Under Nevada law, unjust enrichment requires that the plaintiff either confer a thing or do work for the defendant. The instructions in this case got that right. There are no disputes about the instructions. Instruction number 35 says that the basis of an unjust enrichment claim has to be a benefit to Allegiant, something of value. Number 36 says, a party providing goods or rendering services to another at another party's request or to another's benefit is entitled to recover the goods or reasonable value of the goods or services from the other party. Again, the key, goods or services. Now, we know that isn't interpreted narrowly, but it has to be something. It has to be a real benefit that went to Allegiant. If the goods or services were not provided gratuitously, and the parties understood the compensation would be paid for the goods or services when they were performed, that is the second half of instruction number 36, and although it's a standard instruction, it fits this case like a glove. What was the understanding of the parties in this case? The understanding, based on AAMG's first email, was, hey, I have this great program, and it won't cost you a dime. That was the understanding of the parties as to whether the plaintiff was going to be paid by Allegiant. Instruction number 38, the proper measure of damages is the reasonable value of the services or the market value of the goods. That's a real, meaningful, solid measure of damages. It's got to be the actual thing or the actual work that is valued. And in fact, if it's services, it's based on the customary rate of pay. So plaintiff must show a thing or must show work, must show goods or must show services. The benefit conveyed must be real and quantifiable, and the parties need to have an understanding that the plaintiff would, in fact, be paid. None of those things are met here.
Let me ask you just briefly, are you conceding that Allegiant appreciated, assuming there was a benefit conferred, that Allegiant appreciated the benefit that was conferred? And that's apparently interchangeable with having knowledge of a benefit that was conferred, and it doesn't seem like you're contesting that aspect in particular.
I don't want to make it more complicated than it is. We certainly don't. We believe our people had knowledge of what was going on. We knew that we got the $5,000 to $6,000 that came in the door, so yes, we got that benefit.
Uh-huh.
To the extent Mr. Hill thought he was working for us, I don't think we appreciated or knew he thought that or had any basis to appreciate or think he knew. Mr. Hill had sent us an email right at the beginning saying, I work for these timeshare folks. I'm on the timeshare side. I want to advertise timeshares. I will pay you. You will not pay me. So Allegiant did not appreciate or understand or believe and still doesn't that they got a benefit above and beyond the cash money that they got, the $5,000 to $6,000 for putting the advertisement on the website. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay. Counsel, there was seemed to be two non-written agreements in terms of what was to occur. There was an initial stage, that kind of ended, there was another continuation, and then there was a change where Allegiant said, we don't want to do this anymore, we're going to do something else. Kind of walk us through that.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Hill originally came in with a proposal to test the program on the website. And his belief was that that should be for 30 days and then it should convert to something else. And then, in fact, was a great deal of trial as to whether the thing somehow morphed into an agreement and whether there was ever an agreement, even though, in fact, the contract claim had been dismissed and before trial the parties were ordered not to talk about the contract. There was still a bunch of discussion about what did people think was going on at the time. But what the evidence shows, and probably the clearest example of this, is the $75. Right from the beginning, Mr. Hill's proposal was that he would pay $75 for each time a customer clicked through and ended up taking a tour. And he also said that once we go to a long-term agreement, it'll go up to $100 and maybe we can even talk about some back-end stuff. He said later on, you get some kind of a percentage out of the commission. None of the things that were supposed to be associated with a long-term agreement ever happened. Throughout the time frame, even from Mr. Hill's side, from AAMG's side, it was $75, which was the agreed test period amount. So from Allegiant's point of view, we were never out of the test period. And I don't think, other than Mr. Hill saying he had a contract, which the trial court said he didn't, that there was any contrary understanding on Mr. Hill's part. And his actions, I think, speak louder than words on that. $75 throughout the entire year was the test period rate of pay, and that's exactly what Allegiant got. Does that answer your question?
Partially.
Okay. Is there anything more I can give you on that? I mean, it's certainly true that Mr. Hill had originally proposed moving to a second tier, but there's no evidence that the parties ever actually moved to an agreement phase.
Well, you covered the first two. There's a third part, and that's where the disagreement seems to come into place, and that's where we had a change in what was occurring.
The change to the Wyndham contract?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. At the end of the year, Allegiant did, in fact, contract with a larger resort company, Wyndham, to place an ad, and it's similar in broad concept, but different in a number of ways, including the revenue model for it. But it goes into essentially the same little slot. We gave you a picture, I think, on page 6 of our brief, what these ads look like. It's a little window like that on a web page. And Wyndham went into that slot because typically Allegiant doesn't do more than one of any kind of service sitting there on the same page. If they're contracting with Alamo, they're contracting with Alamo. So they switched over to Wyndham at that point after a year of testing Mr. Hill's product. The Wyndham model was similar in that people would click on it and they would their name would be sent to Wyndham and Wyndham would set up a tour just like Mr. Hill and AMG had done. But it was different and substantially more lucrative for Allegiant because the premium that Wyndham was offering was a $200 Allegiant value. So right up front, Allegiant gets $200 instead of $75 on the back end or the middle end. You didn't have to actually sell anything for us to get $75 in the first place. But Allegiant got $200 for a ticket voucher right up front. When somebody clicked through and went on one of these tours, they'd give them a $200 Allegiant voucher. So that was one of the key differences in the two programs. Does that finish answering your question, Ron?
It does. It brings us back to the doing the work and getting something and the issue as to the Uniform Trade Secrets Act, which kind of got dismissed out of the complaint initially. So I'm still trying to walk this through as to why we should accept your position or accept the trial court in terms of
The Trade Secret Act. I'll go ahead and jump ahead to that because that is important. To the extent Mr. Hill had an idea, it's only protectable if it's a trade secret. Either he's got a trade secret claim under the Trade Secret Act, or he's got an idea that he doesn't have any property interest in, which, by the way, he admitted to at trial, a whole long series of questions. If he doesn't have any protectable interest, it can't be converted, and the trial court correctly recognized that, but it can't be the subject of unjust enrichment either because Allegiant didn't get anything. And I think we've provided you a good list of cases on the trade secret that indicates that that is by far the predominant interpretation of that act. But it seemed to me like there was something more to your question again.
No, just please continue on.
Is there anything you wanted to address with regard to damages and whether or not the expectation damages based on lost profits were appropriate in this case?
That was absolutely the next things that I was going to get to, Your Honor. They are absolutely not appropriate. The question here under an unjust enrichment cause of action has to be what value did Allegiant get? And I encourage you strongly to look at the damages testimony, obviously from my side, particularly the cross-examination. But the expert admitted he didn't value goods or services. On page 1674 of the appendix, cross-examination, your opinion really is solely limited to what AAMG might have lost if they continued in this relationship with Allegiant out into the future. Yes, sir, that is correct. Did you put any value on the marketing plan anywhere in your expert report? No, I didn't value that plan, et cetera, et cetera. There's no expert valuation on the services. There's no expert valuation in the goods. And I'd ask you to look at it. How can a non-confidential sales idea, that little ad that we put on page 6 of our brief, produces $5,000 of a year in total revenue to Allegiant, 5 to 6, somewhere in there, how can that be worth $800,000 to Allegiant?
That's our standard of review. Is it de novo?
I believe your standard of review is de novo as to whether a particular measure of damages is appropriate. That was the Dynalectric case, I think, that we had quoted to you. There was a lot of evidence in this case that this was a valuable deal from the timeshare side. The timeshare people thought it was great if they could get on Allegiant's website and have a long-term deal to be on Allegiant's website, and that's what AAMG was seeking to do all along, because they could earn revenue without paying much money up front until they actually got the people out on a tour. They didn't have to pay, I think there was testimony in the record relating to JetBlue, $50,000 a month to appear in a slot on the JetBlue page. They didn't have to put that out up front. They only had to pay when they got the tour in. So there was lots of timeshare side evidence that this was a great deal from the timeshare side. It wasn't a great deal from the Allegiant side. Allegiant got $5,000 to $6,000 over the course of a year for the use of its website. That's what Allegiant got. And so what we have here is plaintiff wants to get his lost profits from Allegiant, but Allegiant doesn't have his lost profits. And again, I think I've quoted you a number of cases talking about allowing salesmen to sue a sales prospect for commissions that they didn't get when the prospect never agreed to a deal. We can't do that, and that can't be Nevada law. And I'll reserve my time. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Mr. Moynihan, are you ready to proceed?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ross Moynihan, and I'm here for the respondent.
How did they ever get to $800,000 in this case?
Well, you know, there are a number of theories, and the real difficulty is that, you know, we don't know exactly what the jury was saying.
I mean, based upon the record that was presented, what do you think?
Well, there are two ways of looking at it. Number one is that Mr. Hill, who's the CEO of Allegiant, is here with us today. Well, I'm sorry, the CEO of AAMG, is a very experienced executive in the timeshare industry for decades. He was very highly paid during his time with the Wyndham Company, and he is recognized in the industry as an expert in the field, and he's recognized as somebody who gets results, and he is a serious person. So when he devotes a year of his time, and that was the 30-day test period plus the almost 1 year period after that.
But Counsel, even with that being said, that agreement was never memorialized in writing. A final agreement was never put forth.
Well, you know, that's correct. And, you know, that's why the trial court dismissed those contract claims. But it doesn't change the fact that these representations were made to Mr. Hill by Mr. Stacey, who worked with the Allegiant company and who is Mr. Hill's primary contact at Allegiant. So when you go to, well, how did they come up with the $800,000? It's easy to see, and it's detailed in our brief, have somebody who's making, and I believe Mr. Hill's testimony was $600,000 a year with the Wyndham Company, it's reasonable to think that when he is developing and implementing and testing this plan over a long period of time, spending a great deal of time day and night, I think his testimony was 14 hours a day, on this plan, and Allegiant appreciates the benefit of that plan, it's easy to see that the value of his services for that could very well be $800,000.
But don't you have an issue because the Uniform Trade Secret Act is off the table. This was sent, the proposals were sent out to a number of players, nothing was said about being secret or anything else, so what makes it so special that $800,000 should be paid for it?
And you know, you're absolutely right about the UTSA, and I'm looking forward to addressing that. But I'll tell you what the real issue is with this plan. This plan is the basis of forming corporate alliances that result in great profit to everyone involved. This plan in particular was recognized as something that would cost these companies very little.
Well, Allegiant seems to dispute that in terms of, well, they were not making any money. Your side was making all the money on this particular issue. So, well, that being said, why don't you continue?
Absolutely. And, you know, what the real benefit to Allegiant was that they got to use the use this plan, use the result of Mr. Hill and AAMG working for 1 year on this plan and developing it, testing it, and implementing it. And mind you, this was an issue, this alliance with timeshare companies through Allegiant was something that had been discussed, how can we do it? It had been tried, how can we get this done? But it was never successfully implemented without Mr. Hill's decades of experience and his unbelievably hard work. And this plan formed the basis. Allegiant and Wyndham, their deal, and also with the Caesars Entertainment Company, this plan was the cornerstone. This plan is what they used to form these alliances with these companies. It was the very first alliance with the Wyndham Company, and Allegiant used this plan. And they were using this plan as Mr. Hill was developing it after the representations that he would receive a long-term contract. In fact, the deal was, and you're right, wasn't reduced to a written contract, but the deal was 30-day test period, 1 year extended period, and then a 5-year contract after that, like an auto renewal type thing. And we were in that 1 year auto renewal after the 30 days. During this time when these representations were made, Allegiant and Mr. Stacy, who worked for Allegiant, was working at the deal points with Wyndham. He was wooing Wyndham using this plan, saying, come look at this plan on this website. This was the cornerstone of this alliance. They were using Mr. Hill's work to translate into forming this alliance with the Wyndham Company, which is an unbelievably profitable alliance. And in fact, Allegiant, I believe the testimony says that Allegiant and Wyndham tried to hook up before, but couldn't find what they could hook up with, and this was it. And this was it, and this led to this unbelievably profitable relationship, which lasts to this day. They are still using the plan that Mr. Hill and AAMG implemented and tested and developed. Now, if we're talking about the good.
There's just a few things that trouble me that perhaps you could clear up. It seems like the district court judge herself, in discussions with counsel post-verdict, seemed to have trouble with $800,000 and how the jury came up with that. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about her issues with the verdict as it was presented by the jury?
Sure, and you know, it's detailed in our brief, and what she said was that she was confused about one element of the jury verdict form, which was the future damages, you know, you can pick past damages or future damages, and then the jury, and it's undisputed that the jury checked the future damages box and framed those $800,000 as future damages.
Let me ask you this. Isn't that principle somewhat inconsistent with the concept of unjust enrichment?
Well, the real problem is, and let me just lay a foundational basis for this.
But which it basically, and you may disagree, the purpose is to strip a wrongdoer of any and all profits gained is really the purpose of unjust enrichment, and you're not to leave an innocent party in a worse position than if the transaction hadn't taken place.
That's correct.
And in this case, my understanding also was that AAMG was already compensated for its services in the way it was paid throughout this period of time. Well, and if I'm incorrect,
yeah, and, let me know. It really wasn't.
Okay.
And it really wasn't because the reason why AAMG was developing and implementing and testing this plan was because, I mean, AAMG wasn't doing it gratuitously. AAMG was told that it's a done deal. You have these long-term agreements to market these timeshares through our website. Really, what AAMG was doing was they were developing the the benefit for themselves of getting Allegiant's customers and then trying to get Allegiant's customers to go on these timeshare tours. So the money that AAMG received was not the only benefit that it was seeking. It was seeking to develop this plan, which it did, and then reap the benefits of the full development of the plan through receiving Allegiant's passengers.
Okay. Thank you.
So now with the future damages issue that the judge was concerned about, you know, we don't know exactly what the jury was thinking. The verdict form was agreed to by both parties. It was either agreed to by both parties or it wasn't objected to by Allegiant. The jury rendered its verdict, and Allegiant did not question that verdict before the jury was let go. So really, we don't know exactly what the jury was thinking, but there was evidence in the record, and we go through that pretty extensively, how each element of the jury instructions as they were presented, which are consistent with Nevada law, was met. And either it's the value of the services or the value of the plan that AAMG developed. And that's pretty extensively gone over in our brief. Now, there's a lot of lip service paid in the appellant's brief, and especially the reply brief, where it's actually clear that these claims are preempted by the UTSA. And, you know, you can say it and you can write it over and over again in your briefing, but the UTSA does not preclude anything in this case. And the reason it doesn't preclude anything in this case is because, as a threshold matter, you need a trade secret. You know, the appellants quote the France case, and in that case, there was a trade secret that precluded the common law claims that the plaintiff brought in that action, where the plaintiff should have brought claims under the UTSA and the plaintiff did not. In this case, there was no trade secret. What we did was we pled alternative forms of relief, as we're entitled to do under Rule 8, and said, okay, well, we're making this trade secret-like claim, but if it is not, if we don't have the evidence through discovery to support it, we will voluntarily dismiss it. And that's exactly what we did. So there being no trade secret, there can be no preclusion of our unjust enrichment claim. So overall, we do have a situation where all the elements in this case are met. And, you know, the appellant seems to quote cases from far jurisdictions where the cases are factually distinguishable from this case and tries to read elements into the jury instructions, which everyone agreed to, and what was in front of the jury. And the jury heard all the evidence, and it determined, by looking at all these elements, that Allegiant was unjustly enriched. It's clear that AMG conferred a benefit to Allegiant by the fact that it developed this plan, which nobody could figure out how to do before. It implemented the plan with an enormous amount of work over a one-year period. All the time it was working under the representation that it would have a long-term agreement. In fact, it was in the middle of a long-term agreement. And all the while, the...
What did the expert indicate the value of that long-term agreement to be?
Well, really there's a couple of ways to look at it.
No, I have a very specific question.
No, absolutely. What the expert determined was that the continued use of the plan would yield a certain amount of dollars, and that amount was, I think it was $827,000.
In future.
That's in the future, correct. But really, that is a number that can accurately be shown to value the benefit that was conferred, or to value the marketing plan that was developed and implemented. You cannot, you know, Dr. Clardy is not a legal expert. You can say that those are a future damages calculation, but that calculation can be looked at in different ways. That calculation can be easily looked upon as a valuation of what that plan is, a market valuation of what that plan is. You could easily show, and in fact I think that this was possibly where the jury was going, but you could easily take that damage calculation and use it to value the plan.
So that supports your argument that that's where they came up with the number was Dr. Clardy's calculation of the value of future.
Well, correct. But you don't have to look at it as a valuation of future damages. You can look at it as a valuation of the actual plan itself. Furthermore, we're looking at the value of the services, which I've gone over before. We never know. We can't know exactly what the jury was thinking.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And Mr. Arpad, you've reserved 3 minutes, correct?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor. I think you grasp what's going on here. The plaintiff wants 20 years of future profits from a long-term joint venture that Allegiant never, ever agreed to, not for 1 year, not for 5 years, certainly not for 20 years. And to put even a little finer point on it, what the plaintiff wants is the benefit of a 20-year placement on Allegiant's website. Allegiant's website belongs to Allegiant. Plaintiff did not confer Allegiant's website on Allegiant. And the plan consists of put an ad on the website, click through, do tours, get gifts. It is a pretty straightforward plan. Nobody would pay $800,000 for that plan. Not the jury, not anyone else. I would refer you in the brief time I have left to the fail-safe case that we cited. It's a trial court case. It's a little bit long, but if you get toward the end of it, the judge really talks very insightfully about how unjust enrichment has to be the goods and services that were conveyed. It can't be what the plaintiff wanted to get if he had gotten the deal that he wanted to get. But we have serious questions about whether Mr. Hill could have ever earned $800,000, even if he'd gotten the deal he wanted to get. But that's a factual issue. That's not the basis of our appeal. The basis of our appeal is Allegiant didn't get anything worth $800,000.
No benefit conferred.
I don't believe he met any of the requirements for a cause of action. So if that's the case, then yes, no unfair benefits were conferred. We did get $5,000 to $6,000. So if you disagree with me on the elements of the claim, maybe you can make and give him back the $5,000 to $6,000.
Then your argument would simply be that the $800,000 was excessive.
It was, yes, very, very excessive, Your Honor.
Got 45 seconds left.
I will yield my 45 seconds, Your Honor.
All right.
You can all go to lunch early.
Did either of my colleagues have questions? Okay. Counsel, thank you for the arguments on this. The briefing was excellent. And the matter will stand submitted. This court will stand in